people operate, and this, again, is not necessarily Israel-specific, but is very much related to when you come on Aliyah, that most people lack clear... people lack clear financial goals. Okay? And especially when you're coming on Aliyah, you're coming to a new country, and your finances are changing, your whole life is changing, your income, your expenses, the standard of living, how you live your life, right? I mean, again, I just sat with a couple just today, just recently made Aliyah, come from like, you know, a large Jewish community in Hutzlars, where they have, you know, a large house and cars and jobs, and all of a sudden they're coming here, and it's a completely different reality, right? The salary levels that they're looking at in terms of being able to work here are not comparable in the industry that he's talking about.
Nice.
Now I see where that's a... I hope you can hear. I hope that it's not too distracting. So,
can you be
in for it? Can I? They won't see that on the audio. Right? Let me just talk a little bit about wealth creation. Okay? Wealth creation is something that you need to set goals for. People need to be thinking about how they are going to support themselves. Again, if you're already at the point in time where you're retired and there are retirees in the room that are already have earned whatever they're, for the most part, they're going to be earning, and now they're actually transitioning to, so it's a different reality. They have to be worrying about, how do I make my money last? How do I structure it? How do I invest it? Where do I invest it? Do I invest it in a house? How much do I put into a house? How much do I keep in this? Those are the questions, but it's from a retirement spending perspective. On the other hand, there are many, many Olim who have to look at it from the other perspective. How am I going to support myself here? Where is that income going to come from? Many people can have successfully lived in chutzpahs, in careers where they were earning very nice salaries, and that was it. It was a very straight, standard, I earn money, I paid my taxes, and I have enough to live on. For many Israelis, it doesn't work like that. You have to be a little bit more creative, and you have to be a little bit more resourceful in terms of jobs and in terms of structuring things. Most Israelis, I'm sure you'll recognize that people have multiple jobs. Everybody has their hands in a little bit of this and a little bit of that. The people that I've met over the years who financially have been the most successful in integrating into the economy are people who are willing to do that, who are willing to put a little bit of time into here and be a little entrepreneurial and maybe have a job here and maybe have a little this, and that's how they make ends meet. Even if they don't have the large salaries, and even if you have large taxes and high taxes and things are expensive here, and it's harder to make ends meet, and we all know that it is, there are ways of doing it. But sometimes you have to think out of the box. And setting yourself clear goals of what's important to you and what's not important to you. I always tell Olim before they come on Aliyah, you have to know where you want to live and what the lifestyle you want to live. You have to set yourself specific goals, because if you don't, it's not just transferable. Like, you can just take your life over there and just move it and transport it right over here and have it work. It doesn't work that way in many circumstances. And you have to integrate, and you have to really set those goals. Set specific goals about what you're planning on spending, your budget level, what's important to you, right? You have to prioritize your expenses a lot more, which I'll talk about. Okay? But setting goals and trying to get a very clear idea in your mind about what's important and what's less important is critical to a successful integration here in Israel. Okay? It's successful, it's important everywhere, but it's even more important when you're dealing on a tighter budget and in an economy and in a country that is less familiar. Okay? That was number two. Number three, another mistake that people do not appreciate is the difference in the tax system between the Israeli tax system and the tax system from where they are coming. Okay? Moving to Israel is not like moving to, you know, the state next door or even for that matter, you know, to another English-speaking country, that you can expect there to be very similar financial traditions. The differences between the UK, Canada, and the United States are much, much, much more narrow, more similar than Israel. Okay? And again, I'm not going to be able to go through all the reasons and the historical background why that is, but things are completely different here. Okay? I'll just point out a couple things that you need to know about. In Israel, there is a graduated progressive tax system on income earned, active income earned. That's earned. That means as you have a salary and if you have a business, you are taxed more and more, like you are in many countries, as you earn more and more money. That is only on salaried income, earned income. Investment income in this country is taxed at a flat rate. That means from the very first shekel that you earn, you are taxed at whatever that flat rate is. So for instance, right now, right, dividends and capital gains are at 25% here in this country. Doesn't matter if you earn no income whatsoever and you have 1,000 shekels of interest that comes in from the bank, that's what you're going to pay. You're going to pay that rate, that flat rate of income tax. Okay? So
capital gains and ordinary income are all the same.
Ordinary income is different. Ordinary income, which is earned,
dividend.
So dividend and interest and capital gains are all taxed at flat rate.
That's correct. That's 25%.
So it depends. In Israel, like everything, it depends. Interest income is at 15% for many different types. It also depends on what type of dividends and interest that you get, because certain types of interest that you earn on Israeli bonds, if they are linked to the inflation rate, so you actually are not taxed on the inflation element of it at all. So you have to be careful. You can't always compare a 3% or a 4% rate of return in your former country and a 3 or 4% rate of return over here, because they might be taxed in different ways. Okay? What else? Some of the other differences in the tax system. It used to be...
capital gains.
What's the question?
Well, that's different than investment income, right?
Capital gains is one form of investment income.
Okay.
That's an increase in value if you bought a stock, or for that matter, if you bought an apartment as an investment and then you sold that apartment, the increased value is called a capital gain. And that, in Israel, you have a fixed rate that you're going to pay on that, on those capital gains.
What is that rate? Because
it's 25%.
Because it's just like dividends at a bank.
Correct.
Capital gains and dividends.
Correct. Those are basically taxed at the same level.
Because it's a second apartment?
So if you bought a second apartment, so in Israel, it's considered to be an investment apartment. They've been changing the laws. They've just changed them again recently. It used to be that you could sell one investment apartment every 4 years and not pay any capital gains tax on any appreciation in value. They've now canceled that, or they will, or they're integrating a cancellation of it right now. It's one of the measures that they're taking to calm down the market, to put a little of, cold water on the real estate market, which, as you mentioned, right, has done tremendously well over the last 6 to 7 years. Right? There's exemptions for certain types of income in this country. So, for instance, income that's earned from property, from rental, up to about 5,000 shekels is tax-free. Rental income above that, there are three different ways of calculating how you're going to pay that income tax. Depending on your individual circumstances, you can choose which one of the three ways. One of them, just the easiest way for people to understand, is that it's a flat rate of 10% on all income that's earned, which is, again, one of the reasons why the 5,000 shekels. 5,000 shekels per month of rental income is exempt. If you're doing it in that way, it's income. If the renter is paying you this amount, even if you might have had repairs, you have to look at the actual rental income that you're earning, and if it goes above that, so then you can change it to tax. Below that, it's not tax. Okay? Okay. Trust legislation, right? So up till very recently, in recent years, there was no trust legislation that talks at all about how Israelis are to receive distributions from trusts. About 3-4 years ago, that changed, and they started talking about certain types of trusts, that Israelis now became Israeli-based trusts, Israeli resident trusts. And now, even more recently, this past summer, they have now passed new legislation that changes completely how distributions from trusts, anybody dealing with trusts, has to report. Okay? So there's no more free holidays. As far as Israeli tax authority is concerned, they are now fully starting to tax all trust income, all distributions. If anybody has anything to do with trusts worldwide right now, so now is the time to be seeking professional consultations from tax, accountants, etc., state professionals, to make sure that you're properly set up. Okay, and it needs to take place now before the end of the year, because that is a legislation that's going to come into effect at the end of this calendar year.
If you have money in a trust fund abroad?
Yep, correct. If you have money in it, or if you're a beneficiary, or if you're a potential beneficiary of somebody who has a trust set up for you, all those things you want to consult with somebody now. Okay? The main thing, and again, this is not a tax class, so we're not going to be able to go into a lot of the details, but what I want to point out is that the tax system is not just incrementally different. It is completely different than most of the tax systems that you've come from, and you have to educate yourself. Okay, I'll give you another just quick example. Women are taxed differently than men. They have different tax credits, so it makes sense for many couples to have the wife go out and work than it would be to have the husband get a second job. Right? But that's because of the way the tax structure is. Right?
Is that higher or lower?
The tax lower. They get extra credit. The women get extra credit. They get credits for all the children. They get credits. They get extra credits. They get credits for lots of different situations. Right? People have to understand. Oh, let me point out one other quick thing that's very, very important for people to understand. There is no reporting requirement in Israel to the tax authority. That means most Israelis do not file tax returns. There's no reporting obligation. That means that if you are a salaried employee and or you don't have any major investment income, you don't have to file a tax return. You have no communication whatsoever with the tax authority. So you have to know and you have to make sure that your employer or the people that you invest with are taking off the proper amount of taxes. Because if not, you're never going to file a tax return, and you're never going to get your money back. And there are all kinds of different tax breaks that are available.
All based on withholding.
All based on withholding. Correct. Employers withhold taxes, the banks and the investment companies withhold taxes at source. And they do it all based on assumptions. They assume where you live, they assume how many children you have. Again, they'll have all that information usually you fill out. But sometimes things change, and sometimes they make incorrect assumptions, or sometimes you don't give them the full information, or you don't even know all the benefits that you might have. Right? New Olim are entitled to benefits in terms of lower tax rates for earned income. But if you don't tell your employer that you're a new immigrant, they'll never give you the extra tax rate. And that can be tremendous amounts of money.
So there's no form, like a 1099,
nothing.
Or 1040.
Nothing. There's an end of year statement that you get, but if you are a salaried worker, you don't have to file, and therefore you don't have any obligation to go in and kind of correct it.
What do I do in 7 years?
So, again, beyond the scope, really, in terms of like what we're going to be able to do, it's definitely in there.
Okay.
Okay?
It will all be different in 7 years.
Well,
it will be different.
People have to report, but that's the minority. And if you fall into that category of individuals that have to report, so that's what you do. You go and you work with an accountant, and they take your income and your investment income and the like, and income earned abroad, etc., and they file a tax return for you. 100%. 100%. And the Israel tax, there's a tremendous amount of black under-the-table economy in this country, And the Israel Tax Authority has been fighting and is continuing to fight, and they're talking about it, right? Everybody wants me to relate to real estate, right? So one of the areas that the Israel Tax Authority has identified now for the next year to try to identify is all of the Israelis that own apartments that are not paying taxes on those apartments. Now again, there's an exemption, so there's an honor system. I don't have more than one apartment, so nobody reports an income. Let me just throw out a statistic, an amazing statistic that I just saw recently. There are 10,000 people in the country reporting that they have income from investment properties, and they're paying taxes on that income. 10,000 Israelis are filing taxes based on income earned from property. Do you know how many rented apartments there are in the country? Over 500,000. Easily. Okay? So you're talking about 2% of all Israelis. Now again, now it could be that 98% of all Israelis are under that 5,000 shekel. But come on. Some of it is, but a good part of it is not. And nobody has ever checked up on people, and nobody is out there.
But a lot of the properties are also bought by people. I mean, I don't know.
They're bought by foreigners.
By foreigners.
Correct. No. But by law, income that is earned in this country is actually payable to the Israel Tax Authority.
No, even if you don't, foreigner,
even if you're a foreigner.
And what is the punishment?
What's the punishment?
There's obviously no punishment.
Well, so there are some
politicians in jail.
Well. Unfortunately, right, the Israel Tax Authority is understaffed, and they're slowly, and they're getting to it, but it's going to take a long time, and there's still widespread, rampant tax evasion, not avoidance, evasion in this country. I'll tell you just another quick funny story. I won't take too much time, but when they had a tax operation a number of years ago, 2, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, whatever it was, try and catch people who were not paying taxes. What did they do? Okay. They had a roadblock at the major cities, like Jerusalem and Tel Aviv, and they were pulling over at this roadblock any major car that had any kind of like commercial license or sign on it, and they were asking them to produce documentation that they actually had a business open, and they were catching lots of people who were operating these big full-scale businesses with trucks and cars and et cetera. And they never even had a tink open at Masach Masach. Millions of shekels of income going in and out off the books. And that was the way that they went to go and catch people. So it just tells you, I only tell the story just because it gives you the sense of the widespread nature. And it's happening slowly and there are changes. And obviously people have to make their own decisions.
What happens with the electrician that comes to my home with a plumber? He charges 100 shekels plus 18% back. And I give him the 18% back. Am I really just giving him a... Should I be withholding the back and sending
him? No, you can't do that. But
well,
you can. You can request, and you should, you know, if you're concerned about that, you have to have a receipt.
The receipt.
If he properly drinks, so he pays the government because he has a receipt book.
But there's a form.
There's a receipt book. And the receipt book is computerized, or it's, and he has to document everything, and then Masach Masach can come and check him, make sure that he's receiving everything, and make sure he's remitting.
So he's filed a return?
Yeah. Self-employed workers are different. Self-employed workers have to file, and their scrutiny is much higher. Okay, let me go on because I want to cover some of the other things we talked about. Okay, we talked about the first three. Let's talk a little bit about some of the overlooked financial planning strategies. And then I'll try and speed it up a little bit. Okay, one of the major mistakes that people make is a too short term of focus in their financial life. How many people do you know who focus exclusively on getting through the end of the month? It's a very common phenomenon here in Israel, that people just try to get through the end of the month. They try to not be in too much into the minus at the end of the month. They try to figure out how they're going to survive, how they're going to spend whatever they earned extra, and they do find a way to spend whatever they're earning extra, right? And they have a very, very myopic, short-term approach to things instead of looking longer-term. right? You need to be putting together a budget. You need to be thinking about how you're going to be spending your money here in Israel in order to ensure that not only your current needs are being covered, but also your future needs, right? We always have a certain amount of our income that we are putting away for future. That's what the whole concept of retirement planning is, that we're putting away part of our income right now for the future. It used to be that people would start working in their early 20s or in their teens even, and they used to work until they were in their 60s. And that would be 40 plus years of working. And the average life expectancy at that point in time was in, let's say, in the 70s. So you're talking about 4 years of work for every 1 year of retirement. Nowadays, you have people who are starting to work much later, their 20s and their 30s in many cases. Everybody wants to retire earlier, and life expectancy is going up. So you might have a one-to-one relationship now. Somebody wants to retire when they're 60 or 65, and they didn't start working until they're 30, and they might be living in retirement for 25 or 30 years, right? Even if life expectancy, which, by the way, is very high in Israel, over 80. For women, I believe it's like 82, the average life expectancy in Israel. That means that there are lots and lots, hundreds and thousands of people who are living well into their high 80s and 90s and 100s. Okay? So our money has to last longer than it ever did. And we have to prepare for that by putting together proper plans, retirement plans. People need to think about how they're going to survive. And there are lots of ways of doing it, whether it's through pensions and Bituach Lumi and Social Security and investments and the like. But don't necessarily go into it blindly. Think through in terms of a longer-term focus. Okay? Another mistake that people make, or another, is ignoring things like insurance, disability, will, and trust. I can't tell you how many people I know, you know, in my age group, younger couples in their 30s and 40s, who just don't even think ever about wills or insurance. Right? You have to put together a well-rounded financial plan. And it includes all these different types of financial instruments, right? The type of insurance that was relevant for you in Chutzlaret might not be relevant for you here. You might have different types. The insurance system is different. I mentioned the tax system is different. The insurance system is very different over here. Okay? There's no such thing as whole life insurance, for instance. No such thing. It's only term. And insurance in Israel ends when you either turn 65, 70, or maybe there are some policies that go until 75. That's it. Because there's no estate tax in this country, you don't necessarily need that whole life insurance, but it's a different plan. You have to have a plan. People have to have more insurance when they're younger, supporting family and kids as they're growing up, and then they might have to adjust their insurance as they get older. If the plan changes over time. Right? There's a chapter in the book all about insurance, right? About Israeli insurance and the nature of the changes that you need to be thinking about when you're coming. Okay? Same thing with your will. Don't think that if you had a will in your former country that it's going to suffice over here. It can cause tremendous uncertainty and problems between family members if you don't have a will that is also compliant with Israeli law, especially if you're planning on retiring and being here as an Israeli. The Israeli system is different. Okay, if there's one message that you should come out of it with tonight, is that message. The Israeli system is different, and you have to take your finances, your life, and make it consistent with what's going on here, because you're no longer living in your former country. You're living here, and that's an important step for everyone. Okay, another overlooked financial strategy. Okay, something that's called a net worth statement that I believe that most people need to prepare to have an idea of where they're holding at different times in their lives. Right? Sometimes people don't have a clear idea of where they are, where they've been, and where they're going. And this document is not made just so that you can count your money. I'm not into just counting your money for the sake of counting and knowing how much money you have. It's meant to help you make practical decisions. Okay, I'll give you an example. I had a client once who came to me when he was in very major financial difficulties. Okay? He had come to Israel when he was very successful and he had saved a nice sum of money at that point in time when he was quite young. He was probably in his early 30s, mid-30s maybe. And he had saved up over $1 million in savings. And he was living a very nice lifestyle and he had a very senior position. He came to Israel and he even got good positions here, but the salaries here are not like there. But he was still spending what he was spending over there. And he was living a very, very high, expensive lifestyle. And he didn't happen to notice that his $1 million was going straight down. He called me when he was $200,000 in debt. Okay? Because he had never, ever taken the time to see where he was in the bigger picture. And by having a net worth statement and charting it and understanding where you are, right? I don't think I have markers, but, right? I'll kind of like demonstrate that. Right? If you have a net worth statement and you're looking that you're trying to go on this path, you're trying to accumulate wealth to get to a goal, your goal might be a certain number for retirement. So if you're tracking things, you can see where you are. You can see, am I on the way? Am I halfway through retirement and I'm only over here? And I have to get over here, so I have to do one of two things. I either have to change my goal, readjust things, or I have to start earning more money and putting more money aside. Right? If I all of a sudden go down, do I need to make major changes? Well, it depends. Is it a temporary thing because I lost my job and we have to go into savings over the last year or two? Or is it a much more fundamental change in our family lifestyle that needs to change because our financial reality is changing? You won't know that unless you're tracking your net worth. Right? I think there are some examples here in the book as well. That looks at your net worth statement, and so something that you will track over time in order to get a better idea of, are you reaching your goals? Are you coming close? Are you working in that direction that's consistent with what you've identified as being important? Okay? The last of the overlooked financial strategies I'm going to mention is, it's more like, it's not a strategy, it's more of a critical element, which is especially important to families. Okay? Family financial coordination. Okay? I'm not suggesting that a spouse and family has to do everything together, and that you have the husband and the wife and the kids, and everybody's involved in every element of the home finances. Not suggesting that at all. What I'm suggesting is that people do need to communicate, and they do need to work together. Because again, I've seen so many issues with families where people don't know what's going on and you have one spouse that's doing this and they're working completely at odds with what the spouse is. And the number one issue of why people have Shalom Bayit issues, family strife, is because of finance. So you don't have to have everybody working and doing everything together, but you have to have coordination. You have to set common goals, and you have to work together, and if you can't do it by yourself, you have to work with a facilitator and somebody who can help you as a family to work and go in a certain direction. It's also an educational instruction for your children, because if you think that how you manage your finances is not going to impact on your kids, not just because of like how much money you might give them or leave them, but also how you manage your finances also impacts on your children. You have an opportunity to show them how and the values of what you want to espouse, right? You can teach them financial responsibility. And if you choose not to, so your children will grow to be adults who will have no idea how to manage their finances, okay? And if you're like me, you want your children, you want your family members, you want them to have that knowledge, right? Most people are not taught those skills, and it has to come through a family environment. Okay? Take advantage of it as much as you can, and it's also very important when you're coming to a new country, because when you come to that new country, things are different, and the way that you had things working in your former country might not work here, and that's why you need to be adjusting things. Okay, I got through the second section.